Hello there, and welcome to episode number 129 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. All right, so we've got some playoff baseball to talk about here regarding the Toronto Blue Jays, who are set to begin a best of three series versus the Minnesota Twins, beginning with game one on Tuesday, which will be started by none other than Kevin Gausman. I think that was the least surprising option the Blue Jays could have made here for game one, right? Coming off yet another spectacular season with the Blue Jays, Kevin Gausman gets the nod in game one against the Minnesota Twins, where he'll look to improve off a 3.16 ERA, a 2.97 FIP, and a 5.3 Fangraphs WAR over 31 starts during the regular season. And, you know, obviously, it was a slam dunk to have Kevin Gausman start game one. However, this is going to be a little bit of a difficult task for Gausman, or at least on paper it says it will likely be, because the Twins have been a little bit of a pest in the past versus Gausman, where particularly this season, they had some really good takes and their approaches were kind of remarkable against him in the two starts that he made against Minnesota, where the Twins, to their credit, did an amazing job at laying off Gausman's splitter, where they didn't record more than, actually, since Gausman joined the Blue Jays, the Twins haven't recorded more than six swings and misses against his splitter in a single start. And for comparison, earlier this season, back in April, Gausman, I believe, set a career high or tied his career high in swings and misses with his splitter at 20 back in April. So, you know, you look at 6 versus 20, that's a big difference, right? It's usually not a quality start from Gausman if that splitter only generates, you know, 6 or even less swings and misses. So the Twins, for whatever reason, have been able to pick up his splitter out of the hand really, really well. I'm sure the Blue Jays have dove into a lot of video just recently trying to catch any sort of subtle, you know, thing that Gausman was doing to tip his pitches. And from the rough digging that I've done, I haven't been able to pick up anything really that could suggest that Gausman was tipping his pitches and indicating that, okay, I'm throwing my splitter here and my fastball a different count here. You know, maybe it was a subtle little thing with his hand placement, but I think it's been more just the Twins' approach of, and it's going to sound like an old baseball cliche, but if you see it low, let it go. If you see it high, let it fly. And that's just basically, if you see Gausman's fastball coming in high, atop of the strike zone, offer at it. If you see a pitch coming in, you know, towards the knees or lower, let it go, because you know it's probably going to be that splitter and it's going to drop out of the strike zone. Now, the Twins aren't the only ones who've had this type of approach. Other teams have also adapted it, and that's why Gausman's thrown a lot more fastballs down in the strike zone to help combat that approach where teams are laying off anything in the bottom quadrant of the strike zone. So now that's why we've been able to see Kevin Gausman steal so many strikes with his fastball at the knees, because out of his hand, hitters think, okay, that's the splitter, I'm just going to lay off, especially when it's two strikes, right? Two-thirds of the time, roughly, you're probably going to see a splitter from Gausman if there's two strikes against you. And so I think with the Twins specifically, in those situations, in their minds, they're like, okay, anything low, I'm just going to take. I'm not even going to offer at it. It can be in the strike zone. I don't care. I'm not swinging at it unless it's in the upper quadrant. And I think that's more or less how they've been able to have their success against Gausman, because in two starts earlier this season against them, Gausman issued 9 walks and recorded 12 strikeouts. Like 12 to 9 strikeout to walk ratio. For Gausman, that's pretty unrare. He's one of the better starting pitchers in baseball at not issuing walks. That's kind of changed a little bit this year just because, again, a lot more teams have had that approach where they've been able to lay off his splitter. So the walks have gone up a little bit this season for Gauz. But at the same time, with him being able to pound the bottom of the strike zone with that fastball, again, it's helped even things out a little bit. And with this added rest that Gausman has had, you would think that his fastball velocity is going to tick up a little bit, so that hopefully, you know, his fastball is ranging in the 95 to 97, maybe even 98, 99 mile per hour range, rather than, you know, 93, 94, sometimes even lower than that. Because you really want to have not only just the velocity difference between his fastball and his splitter, but when you're throwing 97, 98, and you have that splitter at the back of their minds, they're going to be late on your heater, especially when you're catching them off guard by throwing it down in the zone. Now, obviously, the Twins have been able to pour over video like the Jays have been able to, so I'm sure they're going to be cognizant at the plate of not letting Gausman beat them low in the zone with his fastball. But again, if you open yourself to that approach and you say, okay, I'm going to be more willing to swing at pitches down in the zone, Gausman can adjust to that as well and start throwing more splitters below the knees. So it's probably going to be a bit of a chess game. And hopefully, again, that Gausman will be able to limit the free passes and not extend his pitch count, you know, longer than he would like, because that's something that's gotten him into trouble a little bit this season and has shortened his outings. And that's not to say the Blue Jays don't have the relievers to cover, you know, the game if Gausman leaves, say, after 5 innings. But to me, I would certainly love to see Gausman face the lineup a third time through. And ideally, in a perfect scenario, you don't use, you know, all of your high leverage relievers, or at least the ones that you would like to rely on in tight situations in game one, because in this best of 3 series, there's no days off. It's back to back to back. So even though, you know, everything goes in this series, it's all hands on deck, you got to be a little strategic about it, right? You can't use all your bullets in game one, because then you have none to fire in game two, or you'll be asking all of your top guys to work on short rest in game two. And during this time of year, like, you're probably going to see that anyway, at least to an extent. But with your ace on the mound in game one, you'd like to be able to control that a little bit. So again, I would like to see Gausman go at least 6 innings, face third time through the order. And hopefully he'll be able to do that if he can effectively manage his way through the Twins lineup. Again, throwing a lot of fastballs down in the zone, strike the ball splitters as well, so that, you know, they're not just able to lay off that as well with, say, 90% of his splitters out of the zone, right? He's got to throw some in the strike zone too and get some strikes with that just to keep them honest. So we'll see what happens in that regard. But despite the fact that the Twins put up 6 runs against Gausman in his most recent outing against them back in June, I think Gausman's got a really good chance of performing well against the Twins here. It'll only be his 3rd career postseason starts, so it's not like he has a ton of experience to fall back on. But as long as he maintains that approach of, again, right, fastball's top of the zone, fastball's bottom of the zone, strike the ball splitters, hopefully that'll keep the Twins lineup honest so that they're not able to have those same comfortable and controlled takes that we've seen them enjoy earlier this season over the 2 games that Gausman face them in. So, and opposing Gausman will be Pablo Lopez, not Sonny Gray, which is a bit of a surprise, at least to me. I thought, you know, I thought that Sonny Gray was, you know, an outside AL Cy Young candidate this season, having a phenomenal season. But to his credit, Pablo Lopez had a really good year too, coming off that trade with the Miami Marlins that sent Luis Arraez the other way. Kind of a win-win trade all around, really, if you think about it. I mean, Luis Arraez goes and wins a batting title in the National League, flirts with hitting 400 for the season, at least a little bit. And Pablo Lopez comes over and solidifies the Twins starting rotation, where it pairs another frontline starter next to Sonny Gray, where, you know, the Twins don't have, say, the quality depth in the rotation like the Blue Jays do, where, like, you know, say this series goes beyond two games, because for the Blue Jays, they're going to send out Kevin Gausman and Jose Berríos. The Twins are going to match with Pablo Lopez and Sonny Gray. But if you get to an all-deciding game three, the Blue Jays can turn to Chris Bassitt. The Twins, Bailey Ober, probably gets to start in game three, I would think. But it's not as much of a guarantee as to who they would turn to, compared to the Blue Jays' ability to be like, yep, Chris Bassitt, boom, game three. And he could easily have gone in game two. And I'm sure many Blue Jays fans out there are kind of upset that Bassitt isn't starting game two. I wasn't shocked by it at all, especially considering how the Blue Jays' rotation was mapped out throughout the regular season these last few weeks, where you had Gausman, Berríos, Bassitt. That was the key, the core that was not being changed. So I didn't think that in the playoffs that would be any different. And I think as well, I mean, there's not a bad option here. I mean, obviously, it would absolutely be a gut punch if you lose in two games and Chris Bassitt never touches the ball. Like, that is, without question, the worst case scenario for the Blue Jays. But alternatively, if you need Bassitt to go in game three, you can feel 100% confident about his ability to excel in that spot. And then if you win the first two games, you can line Chris Bassitt up to start game one of the ALDS versus Houston, and then come back with, say, Hyunjin Ryu, or even possibly, I wouldn't think this would happen, but possibly Kevin Gausman on short rest. They could also use Yusei Kikuchi in game two. I'm not entirely sure they would want to do that. I think they really like the idea of having Kikuchi ready in the bullpen as a bulk guy, just in case something goes haywire. Because otherwise, if you don't use Kikuchi in that spot, you obviously wouldn't use Ryu as a reliever. It just doesn't make sense. So your only option for a bulk guy outside of Kikuchi would be Bowden Francis. And despite the impressive year that Francis has had, I would rather turn to Kikuchi in a postseason game that, you know, goes off the rails, so that hopefully Kikuchi can keep things relatively close, in hopes that your offense can bail you out potentially. So I think, even though I would love to see Kikuchi make a postseason start, I just don't envision that happening unless one of the other four, Gausman, Berríos, Bassitt, or Ryu, get injured. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Fingers crossed, knock on wood. But I kind of like having Kikuchi down in the bullpen as a, like, break in case of emergency pitcher, you know? I'm kind of fond of that idea. And I think it could work quite well. If they needed him in that spot, Kikuchi has experience coming out of the bullpen, right? We saw that last season, which kind of helped start his turnaround, essentially. So, you know, if they had to call upon him in any sort of disastrous outing, I would not hesitate and his ability to just, you know, get them through three or four more innings and then turn it over to the rest of your bullpen and see where you're at with your offense as well. So, but getting back to the pitching matchups here, again, I would have thought Sonny Gray would have gone in game one versus Gausman. However, they went with Pablo Lopez, and it's hard to doubt them. Like, statistically speaking, Lopez had almost as good of a year as Sonny Gray. I mean, he posted a 3.66 ERA, a 3.33 FIP. He was a 4.5 win pitcher this season. And it just, he was ridiculous at limiting hard contact, limiting barrels, inducing ground balls at an above average clip, inducing strikeouts at a high rate, limiting walks at a high rate, inducing swings and misses, getting chases, you name it. And it's going to be a tall task for the Blue Jays to enjoy some success against Pablo Lopez, because he's an even better pitcher this year than he was with the Marlins. And this is a guy, too, that not that long ago, I think a few off seasons ago, that a lot of Blue Jays fans were theoretically piecing together like a potential blockbuster trade, but headlined around Pablo Lopez and like Alejandro Kirk or Gabby Moreno. And what's different about Lopez this year is he still has that nasty changeup that's been his bread and butter throughout his career, but he also introduced a sweeper this year, which, I mean, a lot of pitchers did, right? But he ditched the cutter and he kind of morphed it into a sweeper now, which he'll throw primarily against right-handed batters, but he's also been able to mix it against lefties too, keeping them off his changeup a little bit more, and it's been really effective in that usage too. But for the most part, right-handed batters are going to see a lot of four-seamers, a lot of sweepers, some sinkers, and then he'll mix in some changeups, some curveballs. Lefties, you're going to see a lot of four-seamers as well, but more changeups, more curveballs, and you're still going to see that sweeper as well breaking down and in on you. However, despite all that, left-handed batters have proven far more successful against Lopez than righties this year. So, with that being in mind, I think the Blue Jays lefties are going to be very critical in this game, but also this series as well. But to give you an idea of what the difference is, lefties slash 271, 328, 426 versus Lopez, and righties slash 205, 254, 342 against him. He also induced more strikeouts against right-handed batters this season versus lefties. Lefties also did a little bit of a better job at generating walks and hitting home runs as well. So it kind of brings me to this internal debate about whether or not Kevin Biggio will be in the starting lineup for game one, because you look at these metrics here and you would think, okay, all right, Kevin Biggio would be a better matchup than Whit Merrifield against Lopez, especially when you consider Kevin Biggio homered against Pablo Lopez earlier this season, back in May. So he already has that muscle memory, that image in his head that, okay, I see this pitcher well. I can do damage against him. And not to mention, Kevin Biggio's an even better hitter now than he was in May. That was just like the start of his transition back to being an effective player. I really think it would be beneficial for the Blue Jays to have Belt, Biggio, Varsho, and Kiermaier all in the lineup for game one against Lopez. I don't know if John Schneider would do that. I don't know if he would sit with Merrifield. But if you look at the stretch numbers, and you compare Whit Merrifield and Kevin Biggio, Biggio was the more effective hitter over the last month, 2 months, compared to Merrifield. So you take it that into consideration. You combine it with the fact that lefties have hit Lopez better than righties. You also add in that Biggio homered off Lopez earlier this season. I just think it would make all the sense in the world to send out four lefties rather than three against Lopez. So I kind of think you stick with the hot hand, you stick with the matchups. I would like to see Kevin Biggio in the lineup game one. Now you could use Whit Merrifield off the bench once you get into Minnesota's bullpen, which it's not as good as the Blue Jays, but it's still really good bullpen with Johan Duran closing at the back end. They do have a pair of lefties down in the pen. Caleb Thielbar is the one name you got to keep an eye on, because he'll likely be coming into the game whenever the Blue Jays get to the portion of their lineup that has either, you know, Belt and Biggio or Varsho and Kiermaier. That's when you could think about using Whit Merrifield or Davis Schneider as a pinch hitter in those spots. But for the first few trips through the lineup, I would rather have Kevin Biggio in there over Whit Merrifield. Historically, John Schneider has used the mantra of sticking to his guys. And you would think that would be leaning towards more of a veteran presence rather than a younger-ish hitter in Biggio, even though Schneider has known Biggio longer than he's known Whit Merrifield. But I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked, especially when you consider the usage that Biggio had over Merrifield down the stretch. Biggio was one of the guys that helped the Blue Jays get to this spot. So I think it would make all the sense in the world to use Biggio against Lopez rather than Whit Merrifield. So we'll see how that goes. But overall, I still think it's going to be a bit of a grind for the Blue Jays. And given how this season has gone, I don't think that would be any sort of surprise for anyone, the fact that the Blue Jays would have to grind out runs in the playoffs, considering they had to do that for the majority of the regular season, right? Very rarely did they enjoy a laugher, or were they able to score runs easily, particularly via home runs, which Minnesota's offense has done a much better job at this season compared to the Blue Jays. So that'll certainly be something the Blue Jays will have to try and limit. They gotta try and limit the long ball, because if you look at statistics, the Twins are going to outmatch you in the slugging department. So if you're not able to manufacture runs and generate offense that way, you're going to have to rely on your pitching staff to do their part to limit the Twins from overmatching you via the long ball. I think in terms of the Blue Jays staff, given how the Twins roster and lineup are constructed, it would not shock me if Yenesis Cabrera and Tim Mayza both play key roles, not just in game one, but also throughout this series as well, because the Twins theoretically could send out four left-handed batters against Kevin Gausman and Jose Berríos in games one and two. Five if you include the fact that Jorge Polanco is a switch hitter and will almost certainly be hitting from the left side. The Twins also could bring Trevor Larnach off the bench, Andrew Stevenson off the bench. Both are lefties. They got a switch hitting Willie Castro that they could use off the bench as well. So, and you also have to take into account too that the Twins are beat up right now. They believe that Carlos Correa will be healthy enough from his plantar fasciitis and torn ligament in his foot that he'll be in the lineup for game one, but Royce Lewis may not be available. There was a lot less certainty when Rocco Baldelli was asked about him yesterday. You also have Byron Buxton on the IL, another key hitter for the Twins. He's got a hamstring issue. He's been out for most of this season. I'm not sure if he'll be in the lineup or even on the roster. Joey Gallo's been banged up for them as well. That's another left-handed batter that they could put in the lineup, but it totally depends if he's healthy enough to be in the lineup. But again, that leads me to the fact that Cabrera, Meza, probably Chad Green and Eric Swanson too, because those are two arms that have good reverse splits. Those four pitchers down in the bullpen, they're going to be key for the Blue Jays in this series, because they're going to face a lot of lefties in these you know, two or three games. Again, like with Gausman, possibly Berríos and Bassett, like those are three guys who have pitched deep in games for the Blue Jays this season. But we all know that bullpens shorten games in the playoffs. And if any one of those three starters run into trouble at any certain point, John Schneider's got to have his bullpen ready to come in, because the margin for error is so slim in the playoffs, especially in a best of three series where games can change on a dime. So, you know, with how talented, how locked and loaded that bullpen is, they have to be on standby, not just later in games, but third inning, fourth inning, fifth inning. Like it needs to be anything to win, right? Doesn't matter how clean, how dirty it is. All that matters is you get the W. So if that means pulling Gausman or Berríos or Bassett early because they're struggling with a certain part of the lineup, that might just be something that Schneider has to do. I don't know if, again, he will have, I don't know if it's courage, but maybe the I don't even want to say guts, because that's, again, getting back to confidence and courage, but maybe it just comes down to whether or not his mindset will be in that position where, okay, even though I trust my guys to get out of this spot, I need to take it out of their hands. Like, that's kind of the approach that managers need to have during this part of the year, where if your guy just doesn't have it, if your guy is struggling, you've got to go out there and pull him, even if it's as early as the second inning. Because, again, like, anything can happen in the playoffs, so you need to get a win as clean or as dirty as possible. So I'll certainly be heavily focused on this, and I'm sure many Blue Jays fans will as well, on the decisions that Schneider makes throughout this series. So we will see how that plays out. But I think overall, I without question give the Blue Jays a puncher's chance in this series. I mean, at the end of the day, they're facing the Twins, a team that had the worst record amongst all of the playoff teams in baseball, I believe. Certainly the American League. Probably shouldn't have said that. I should have probably just double-checked it before I said that. Either way, the Twins roster is better than their record, but still, this on paper is a favorable matchup for the Blue Jays, right? You know, preferably, I may have leaned more towards facing the Rays just because of how well the Blue Jays fared against them over these final 2 weeks. So, you know, I wouldn't have been as opposed to face the Rays as I would have been, say, even last year. But this is how things shook out, right? The Blue Jays could have faced the Rays had they won either of their last two games. But they didn't. So now we're here. Now the Blue Jays have to go through the Twins. And then if they move on, they got to find a way to grind through the Houston Astros, which obviously, you would think that'd be a more favorable matchup than facing the Baltimore Orioles. So you have your give and take there in terms of matchups. But first, we got to focus on the Twins here and finding a way for the Blue Jays to carve out a couple of wins here over the next few days. But without a doubt, I think that the bar, the floor, will be not repeating the heartbreaking collapse in Game 2 of last year's wildcard series, where the Blue Jays kind of absolutely collapsed on themselves in that game, where they absolutely should have won and didn't. So I think if we enter this series with that sort of expectation, hopefully a lot of us will be, you know, surprised with the outcome. But again, anything can happen at this point of the season, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.